The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Here's the idea for the next 10 pods. We can do Paddy's little holiday review. 40 minutes of review.
Like Catherine Thomas here, no frontiers.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Cullen Relief is off colour, Blues down, Dragons is Roy Keane's match report on the Leinster game there. So that is the story with the newspapers this morning. Anything in that you needed to get off your chest for us?
Not really. We're going to be joined by Alan Quinlan in just a moment to go through that interesting win for Leinster at the weekend. Like, it does seem that there is, regardless of what format that the rugby calendar is in, there is this sense at the start of the year where you just can't get too carried away with anything, because there have been so many positive signs for a number of provinces over the years, and really it doesn't come down to the boil until late next year. Of course, once Europe gets up and running, then it's a different situation altogether. But when it comes to our brave new league in rugby, then I think even when it comes to Ulster, who were brilliant at the weekend, well, brilliant in patches, and Connacht as well, and Munster, of course, I think that there's always a sort of wait and see until the business end.
Here's a question for you, right? Are we too obsessed about the World Cup in rugby?
Possibly.
In that we won't allow ourselves to enjoy the next 2 years, for this is traditionally the year where we do well, because it's the year before the World Cup year, you know.
Next, like, year is 2022 is the season. Sorry, yeah.
And maybe if we do well this year, we'll be like, I'm not going to enjoy this though, because you know it's coming. We're going out, and we are going to go out in the World Cup. We've got to beat Scotland in the group stages, but then we get like France or New Zealand in the quarterfinals. Mm. And it's France at home with their all singing, all dancing team of superstar wunderkinds, mm-hmm, versus a New Zealand team who, okay, beaten yesterday in an all-time classic by the Springboks. Mm-hmm. So chances are we're going to get beaten by one of those two teams in the quarterfinals, and that is our destiny. And yeah, it means that everything is a failure in between now and then, right? Mm-hmm. Unless we somehow overcome that. So therefore, stop watching, close the curtains, don't enjoy, don't dream. What do you do in this?
Like, I think that it's too late for these sort of psychoanalysis conversations, because we've already had too much pain, and we've already got carried away on so many different levels that we are invested in this. Like, there is, you can reach for any sort of Eddie O'Sullivan quote here. You can say, like, you can't unpop a bottle of champagne or something like that, because it is too late. It is absolutely too late to go back and say, you know what, we suddenly don't care about 07 or 11 or 15 or 19 or 03 or all of them. We don't care about that all of a sudden, because that is what it would require. It would require us to go back in time and say, listen, this World Cup doesn't matter. It is the historical baggage that we bring into a Rugby World Cup which makes Irish people care a lot about a Rugby World Cup. And yes, it's probably wrong, the level to which we've inflated it to, but it's happened and it's too late. And brace yourselves.
But shouldn't we just enjoy the fact that Munster were 15-0 down and won a game against South African opposition for the thing that it is, as opposed to, like,
got to wait until the silver. But you see, Munster is different. Munster, the context of Munster is that they haven't won a trophy in 10 years.
Or you go back and you just, that's the thing. It's, do you know, at the end of the season, the Mayo lads all went back to their clubs.
Yeah.
And they found some human comfort, yeah, in that.
And I'm sure Munster,
is that not what we need to do?
Munster found a lot of human comfort on Saturday night, and but it's a fleeting thing, that sort of human comfort. Like, but it's different. It is different. Like, I mean, you've got Kevin McLaughlin, who goes back to his club after losing the 2020 All Ireland final and wins county championship at Mayo. That is more than just a moment's comfort. That is a lingering thing, because you've got an actual trophy with something that actually matters. These Munster lads aren't going anywhere else. They're playing with Ireland, and some of them, not all of them, or they're playing with Munster. Like, winning this trophy is the be all and end all. It is not this trophy, but a trophy. It's what Munster want to do. There is also the factors that the team.
So if Munster win something, mm-hmm, and Ireland don't make the quarterfinals, are you still a happy man? Would you trade that now?
I'd say, would you?
I'm giving you a European Cup in the next two seasons and a
World Cup semi final,
a group stage exit,
and a group stage.
Are you happy?
Like, yeah, I guess so. I mean,
right, and I'm giving you nothing for Munster and a semi-final for Ireland. Which of these two things makes you happier?
Well, I think that moment of beating Ireland, beating France or New Zealand in that quarterfinal would be pretty special, I think, wouldn't it? Because again, that comes back to the whole thing. We built this up so much that winning a quarterfinal feels like this national moment of celebration, which it possibly shouldn't be.
If we do win one of those quarterfinals, right, the first people on the plane to meet the Irish rugby team afterwards should be the Mayo footballers from 2021 who are like, look, lads, this is a big game. It's a big game, well done to you. But Tyrone are waiting in the next round. You've got Tyrone. Or maybe it should be the Tyrone footballers, should it?
Should I bring
the Tyrone footballers out and go... Yeah, I'm watching y'all. Look, you're doing exactly what Mayo did, lads.
Do you think it's just a point Brian Doher now, bring him into the backroom team in some capacity to try and get them over the line.
Conor Myler, like, I mean...
That is the thing. Like, it's going to happen eventually. Ireland will win a quarter final, but I think you mentioned this a lot.
It might not happen eventually. It might never happen.
It will definitely happen eventually.
It won't. There's no guarantee it's going to happen.
No, there's no guarantee. But
England are getting their house in order. France are getting their house in order.
That's two.
Okay, I mean,
six more spots.
It's possible. Well, there aren't really, because you only need four good seeds.
Sorry, two more spots. That's the thing.
You only need four good seeds who are always going to be ahead of you.
I would say, I'm predicting that it will happen.
New Zealand and South Africa. We need them to be drawn against each other. We need to play Wales in a quarter final. And then, oh look, Wales beat us in a quarter final.
But like we thought we got lucky for 2019, and when we looked at the draw, we're like, well, we're definitely going to top our pool, and we're coming up against then a South Africa team who were in disarray. But then we didn't end up topping our pool, and South Africa ended up winning the whole thing. So it actually wasn't very lucky at all. So maybe we're just better off just with this low expectation of doing nothing whatsoever. But like you're saying, do we focus too much on the World Cup? It is the 4th of October, 2021, and we are talking about the 2023 World
Cup.
That's
what I'm saying. We need to enjoy the journey, not the destination.
I'm with you on that.
It's 8:56 this morning. Alan Quinlan is with us. Good morning to you, Alan. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Oh, you've got the red on. You must have been happy with the second half performance.
I tell you, there was an air of relief around Thomond Park on Saturday night. First half wasn't good. And, you know, Munster got four tries forward. Dominated tries in the second half. And... But frustrating in a sense, I'd say, for the people that were there. There was kind of an eerie silence, particularly leading up to halftime. Then Jack O'Donoghue scored that try, and it was totally different. Peter O'Mahony stopped a certain try for Libbock that would have made it 19-0 against the Stormers, which was remarkable, really. I was commentating on the game, and I thought the Stormers were fantastic. And it's difficult at times when you're on commentary how to process it really, really quickly, because you're trying to focus on the next thing all the time. But looking back at the game, Munster were poor and really poor in that first half, and they struggled to find answers to what the Stormers were doing.
There's a lot of people who are fairly ambivalent about the new league and what it means and the long term, but it's matches like this that do seesaw, where you see some really good, not just bad performance from Munster in the first half, we've got to give Stormers some credit as well, that actually sucks people in and goes, well, actually this is going to be pretty interesting. If the quality of fare is a top quality South African team hammering Munster at home for 20-25 minutes, then people are going to tune in, particularly because the Munster comeback was so spectacular as well.
Well, it's good in a sense that we've only had one win from eight games from the first two rounds with the South Africans, and that was the Lions against Zebra. We want them to be competitive. We want them to ask questions, and maybe it's been a bit unfair. It's very early in the season for Munster, given the, you know, match practice and sharpness and fitness and all that kind of stuff. The South African teams, I thought they'd hit the ground running better because they're all off the back of Currie Cups. They've played a lot of games together in the last number of weeks without their internationals. And they've been largely the same groups who've played for them in the Currie Cup. And we want them to be competitive, for sure. And you know, when teams go and play them in South Africa, it's going to be much, much, much more difficult. And maybe it's a mental thing for them to get up to speed, being away from home for a long period. They're here for a block of 3 or 4 weeks, all the South African teams. But I just thought what happened in Thomond Park and the other night was, you have to give credit to the Stormers. I thought they were fantastic. Their execution, their passing, their ambition to run with the ball. You know, their fly half, Libbock, who I relatively unknown player. He was sensational. He's a running fly half, and they caused Munster a lot of problems. Munster couldn't get over the gain line, and then they made mistakes themselves and kind of handed the ball back to the Stormers. So if you do that on a good night against any team, who are, their backs are to the wall, and I suppose they came, they went to Thomond Park with an ambition to try and play, and those passes started to stick, and suddenly you have that situation where you've got to react and try and change things. At no stage did I think Munster were not going to turn it around, but at 19, if it was 19-0, you know, it could have been a lot trickier for them.
Well, why did Munster turn the tide then, or maybe more to the point, how come the Stormers stopped cutting through Munster like a knife through hot butter?
Well, Munster sorted out their possession game, which, you know, it's one of their strengths. You know, they've had plenty of critics and criticisms in the last number of years, but look, their set piece is normally good. Their forward play is normally good. They started to get some gain line success. The ball was quicker for Craig Casey. They were able to play in the right areas. And they probably just decided to do the simple things in that second half and grind out a result. The Stormers captain Murat was sin bin just after half time, and I think that was probably a significant period where Munster scored two tries, and they were forward tries, you know, mauls, picking goals. And I suppose when that's happening, if you're a player out in the field on, you know, it's probably not pretty on the eye and maybe not what the fans wanted to see. And it's a real contrast probably from the week before for the Sharks, where Simon Zeba's try at the end is probably as good a try as Munster have scored in years in for themselves. The accuracy and the passing of that last try last week. And so I suppose people want, and look, there's certain criticism going to be leveled at them about the quality and attack and all that kind of stuff. That's where the question marks are. And if you don't get that in the game like this, then people are kind of leaving the stadium thinking, you know, we want to see more attack. But they did adapt, and I know Johan van Grand spoke about it afterwards, and you're going to have games like that, but there still is question marks, of course, around the attack and the realignment and stuff like that. But they did what they had to do, and as I said, if I was a player out there, you know, win the game, turn it around, and sometimes that's the simple way. So by holding on to possession and just being a bit more aggressive and accurate at the breakdown, and they just, it was working for them, so they kept going at that.
It was interesting when RG Snyman came on, just the massive roar that erupts around the stadium when he comes on, and then his try, it's almost like a massive tight end playing American football coming up against juvenile players. Nobody can bring him down one-handed. And again, just this massive kind of moment of, I don't know, energy that goes through Thomond Park. It looked like anyway, Alan, I was watching it on TV. Like,
yeah, it was.
Just that sort of player. Like, that's the sort of player that can completely change a game and is a total wild card for any opposition.
Yeah, it was brilliant. He's obviously had a really difficult time getting injured in that first game against Leinster, and he's a superstar player. And, you know, we've seen only just snippets of him in the last 2 weeks, which is great to see. But, you know, he's going to be vital when you come to the big European games or the big knockout games at the end of the season. He could be a game changer. And if they get a full team on the field, it's an if they get all their players fit. Well, you think with Snyman in the pack, he can make a real difference to him. Will he be the difference between them winning a trophy or not? Who knows? Will the attack or the accuracy be the difference? You know, it needs to get better for sure. I think they know that themselves. And it's too early to be kind of too critical of them. And they know themselves on Saturday night. It was a terrible first half from them. They allowed the Stormers play, and that's probably the frustrating thing. And it's a lesson learned. They're away to Scarlets next week, and they have a block of games to try and reintegrate players. But having Snyman back in the group could be massive for them. They'll be hoping that Jacques Nienenberg doesn't bring him into the November internationals, which is probably likely that he will. But come December, I think, for those big European games, they're away to Wasps, home to Cass. You know, if you deal in the Snyman, Farrell in the team, those guys will make a difference, and they're top quality players.
Just one other one on Munster for me anyway, Alan. The Ben Healy substitution, I mean, he kicked with conviction when he came on. Carberry maybe didn't have his best day. Are we going to get to a stage this season where this becomes a real toss of a coin of a decision, where Healy can become out half number one for Johan van Graan?
I don't know. I think you've got to, you know, I said this in the commentary the other night, you know, Joey Carberry at the moment just looks a little bit sheepish and a little bit someone trying to get up to speed and just get his confidence back and that zip back. It's tricky for, and he'd be frustrated with the first half when his forward pack probably were making mistakes and errors and they didn't hold on to the ball for long enough for giving a platform. He's a wonderful player. The kicking, the kicking is something that it's just for him personally. It wasn't going to be the difference in the end of winning and losing the game, but some of the strikes weren't great. And you'd love to see a fella like that just for his own confidence, striking the ball really well and getting all those kicks. But he just doesn't look right at the moment. But he needs more matches. And, you know, you've got to back Joey Carberry. He's a wonderful player. And I think I really hope he has a big season. But just as a tiny little bit of that spark and that natural ability that we're not seeing at the moment. But it's only two games in on, you know, it's very, very early days. And but having Ben Healy as an option, he's kind of like your quarterback in the NFL. If you get him on the field and you end up moving Carberry somewhere else because of his quality or taking him off, you get a penalty late on in a tight game from anywhere around the halfway line or even further out. You think Ben Healy is an incredible option to get the kick. There was a penalty before the one he kicked the other night was outside the halfway line, and he was wanting to kick it, and then Munster decided to go down the touchline. But it's a wonderful option to have.
It helps to have a big boot on the pitch. All right, Connacht in many ways was the performance of the weekend from the Irish provinces.
It was, yeah, they were brilliant. They weathered a storm in all fronts. The weather was terrible in the sports ground the other night, and you know, they conceded a try very early on, but really adapted. Put in a super performance. I thought they were the Bulls were. Jake White was blaming the weather afterwards and interpretations from referees and all that kind of stuff. But it was a very disappointing performance from the Bulls, and they seemed to be shell shocked. Disrespected Connacht a little bit. He said he didn't know much about them, that they were poor relation of Irish rugby, and that the good players from Ireland, you know, head west, and they have similar situations to South Africa. Whether there's some truth in that, you know, we do see that player movements around Ireland where players are not getting contracts in Leinster, Munster, and they head to Connacht and they do very well for themselves. But it probably fired Connacht up a little bit, and they put in a brilliant performance. It was certainly the best performance from an Irish province at the weekend, and in terrible conditions, and to get a bonus point in the end. I thought Tom Farrell's try was just epitomised what they're trying to do. It was a great score off a scrum, taken right to the line, and he sides through a gap. You could argue it's poor defence from the Bulls, but it was a brilliant, brilliant score. And Mac Hansen's try, then, that was a piece of individual brilliance, a wonderful score. So they got some great tries there, and they played really well and deserve a lot of credit for that performance Friday night, particularly what happened on the week before away to Cardiff.
The Jake White comments are interesting. Like, there is blaming the conditions, and then there is his analysis of it. He said the wind was pumping and the rain came down. When you lose a toss here, it really becomes like cricket. You struggle to get up the hill. The ground is sloped that way, and it's also the direction the wind comes from. Is that a big deal? Like, we often hear about the wind and the rain, but the slope in the sports ground as well, Quinny, is that a big thing?
Well, I've played there many times, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure what hill he's talking about. Because there's no obvious hill there. You feel that in some grounds around Europe when you play, that there's a bit of an advantage playing one way, that there's a slight elevation, or maybe the crowd or the wind blows a certain way. It's been difficult playing both ways at times when the weather is bad in the sports grounds, but it probably shows that they didn't respect Connacht. They didn't respect what they were facing and the possible conditions. And, you know, they were sloppy. And for a big, massive physical side, Connacht really kind of got amongst them. Papali'i obviously is very strong. Fifita coming off is going to give Connacht extra power and physicality this year. But I just thought that they were accurate. They put pace and tempo to the game, and the Bulls just couldn't live with that. So Jake White is always making some sort of excuses, and I think he should look within. And certainly they disrespected Connacht, I think, and they thought they were probably going to turn up and just control the game with their strength.
Hopefully now Connacht can put a couple of performances back to back, because the comments from Andy Friend after the first game was that the coaching ticket was fairly confident that the work that they were doing would pay off. It's great to see it pay off so quickly. Now they just need some consistency, and I know there was some turnover in the backroom team there as well, so that might feed into the fact that there are new things being worked on and there's some new signings as well. So fingers crossed that the arrow pointing up continues for Connacht. Let's talk about Leinster. So Leinster went to Dragons and won 7-6. One of those kind of grim battles of the will. The transformation of Cian Healy from one side of the scrum to the other, from loose head to tight head, was not something I'd heard anything talked about over the last couple of years. Wasn't a suggestion that I'd seen many people speak about. Everybody had kind of kept an eye on Porter's transformation from one side of the scrum to the other, and now back. And maybe it makes perfect sense for somebody at Healy's age to do this. I haven't seen it happen for 34-year-olds to move, particularly somebody with 100 caps, to move from one side of the scrum to the other. But it looks like it's working so far.
Yeah, nothing would surprise me with Cian Healy. I think I was in Irish squads with him back right to 2007 when he was training with Ireland before the 07 World Cup. And I just remember being in awe of the physicality, the hardness and the kind of durability of this guy at such a young age. And he's obviously gone on to have a fantastic career. Very unlucky in 2013 with the Lions tour when he got selected and got injured. I think at that stage he was probably right up at the top of the charts for as a loose head prop in world rugby. And he's been a brilliant player for Leinster and Ireland over the years. So it doesn't surprise me. It kind of went under the radar this one, Jared, didn't it? We didn't hear a lot about it. But for him to move over now is a little bit surprising, in a sense that obviously when Leo Cullen spoke about it last week or the week before, that the reasons to try and get more depth at tight heads. And I just thought he came on yesterday, first scrum he had, he gets a penalty. Leinster marched the Dragons backwards. Right, okay, you got to look at the quality opposition. Can he do that for Ireland if he comes on or starts as a tight head? But he's the kind of fella that, if you know what I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he'd be willing to do this and would be able to make a fist of it, because there is a big difference from going to loose head to tight head. In my time at Munster, I think Peter Clohas, he was a tight head. He went to loose head to try and facilitate John Hayes being a tight head, who was in a transition from kind of second row. And I played a good bit of club rugby with Shannon, my club at the time. And the idea was to try and get him to, you know, get him on the field and get Claw on the field as well. But Claw, I remember asking Claw what it was like several times, and he said, look, it's tight head is way harder. For him going over as a loose head was a bit of an armchair ride, because you're only scrummaging against one guy there as opposed to two guys. But just the brute strength of Cian Healy will obviously make a big difference, but there's a technical ability to being a tight head as well. And I just think it's incredible to see it, and it wouldn't surprise me if he makes it work.
Well, is it possible that it prolongs his career by a couple of years? Because you expect that your loose head to be full of energy and full of running and maybe a bit of a ball carrier if all is going well. And that's probably a stage of Cian Healy's career where that bit of his career is winding down. But if he's coming on for 20, 25 minutes to be a totally acceptable international quality tight head, then he could actually play another two or three seasons.
Yeah, for sure. And he's such a freak in nature as regards the conditioning and the strength and the power that he has. And it's up to himself, obviously, the way he looks after himself and wants to keep going. But for him to move over tight head, as I said, I think he could make a real fist and go of this. Tyke Furlong obviously has bucked the trend in recent years about you know, footballing ability of tight heads and ball carrying and passing and all that stuff. It's the full package there with Furlong, you know, and it's proven. He's world class. But, you know, for any coach, one of the most important positions on the field is the tight head. Probably the most important, because you just want to make sure that you get your scrum right. You can't win games if your scrum is going backwards, and it's a vital situation. So it's definitely an option of prolonging his career here. But we've got to see more of it, Jerry. You can't just do it against the Dragons away and do it in some URC games. It's probably when it steps up to European level and international level, can he do it there? And as I said, it wouldn't surprise me if he can, but it would give him an option of probably prolonging the career a bit, because it's very true what you say. You know, we expect loose heads to be dynamic and carrying the ball a lot and you know, being around the field a lot more. And this is an option for him that may prolong his career.
Dan Levy's back, and that's a great thing. What level of expectation should we have around him?
They're probably the only two positives from that performance yesterday, and maybe the win. Look, they won, but Leinster were, you know, after having so much possession and pressure on the Dragons in the first half, they were down to 13 men. It was a really poor performance, I think. Surprising. I've been to Rodney Parade over the years against the Dragons, and back when they were Newport, and it can be tricky when the crowd get behind them and a few refereeing decisions go against you. Mistakes start to happen, but I was surprised with Leinster how poor they were at times yesterday, and continuously just turning the ball over, knocking the ball on, realignment. Again, there's some mitigation there, like we said about the Munster performance. It's early days, and Leinster are a big scalp for everyone. You know, Munster are a big scalp for everyone. So you're playing against teams who really raised their game, and the Dragons did that. You know, they have, even though they have a small Welsh contingent, they have Wainwright and Moriarty in the back row, who are really, really good players. But it was a really poor performance from Leinster. But I just thought, when I saw Dan Levy coming on the field, I said, that's a positive. It's game time. It's kind of like RG Snyman coming back. You know, it's that type of player who can impact and change things massively. He left to wait his turn to get back in as a seven, because Josh van der Fleer was superb. He was brilliant, and I think his performance, there's an energy and an aggression that seems to have changed a little bit. Whether that's coming from the Irish coaches or Leinster coaches, about being more aggressive and more dynamic in his carries, he was really good yesterday. But having Levy back, and the thoughts of a fit Dan Levy, whether he'll ever get back to what we saw a number of years ago from him before the horrendous injury, who knows? But getting him back in the field is a big plus for Leinster and Max Deegan. Loads of depth for them in that back row.
Not a bad weekend for Ulster either, and not just with regards to their results. Dan McFarland was pretty excited by the performance of Dwayne Vermeulen as well against the All Blacks at the weekend, and I guess everybody's looking forward to seeing him play in the URC and the Champions Cup over the next little while.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's not... That was an incredible game on Saturday. South Africa winning in the end. Vermeulen looks like he's kind of back up to speed, and for him, getting him to sort of to Ulster is, you know, it's the here and now. As I said a while back, when the signing was announced, if he can bring that level of performance, there'll be a lot of weight and expectation on his shoulders. And if he has a bad game, there'll be a lot of groaning and moaning and questions about it. But he's a top quality player who can bring power and aggression and ball carrying ability to an Ulster side that really need it. Lots of question marks in the last number of years about that finished product, that aggression, that ball-carrying ability, and he brings all of that.
Barbalaza on YouTube says, the Springboks were superb on Saturday. They kicked less than New Zealand. They went wide. They offloaded. Let's have some credit where credit is due. I didn't see the game, but by all accounts, it was a bit of a classic.
It was, yeah. And I tell you, I was thinking this after the game, and I saw some stuff online that, you know, there was a lot of criticism, I suppose, from the public about the Lions South Africans games, which were justified. They were terrible to watch. But you just think that if South Africa can can use their attacking game more. They're the full package, because it was incredible. The hands, Lucanu Am, the pass for a little flick around the back for Damien Dialande for the first try. Mapimpi, ball carrying ability, and there's no Chelsea and Colby there at the moment. Pollard can pass, he can take it flat to the line. Dialende is a good footballer as well. Vili Leroux. So they have incredible attacking threats, and I just thought that that's what they brought on Saturday, and maybe it stunned the All Blacks a little bit. They brought great attack to their game as well, and you know, it was a superb game. It was a brilliant game, and it was, they finished on a high. I think there was question marks about the Springboks a few weeks ago when they lost those two games to Australia, but they just have an ability against New Zealand. It went close the week before, it was 19-17. They can just get amongst them, and they have a confidence and a belief, this group, now that can beat them nearly every time they play them.
Fair enough. I'm delighted for them. Best team in the world. Alan, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
It's Alan Quinlan there, joining us every Monday and Friday here on OTBAM. OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, but your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Mark Dunning says, I know you're not massive fans of South African rugby, but the games between South Africa and the All Blacks should be in the green.
They haven't gone away, you know. I'm talking about our South African YouTube viewers. Very good morning to all of you. Please bring the love for Jerry Gilroy here.
We know how much you love us.
I mean, I can't believe you didn't even bother to watch them.
I'm sad. I watched them last week and saw the last minute kick that New Zealand had to beat them. That sounds interesting. The lead changed four times in the last 10 minutes.
Like, Rassie Erasmus really is the genius of our times in South African rugby, or the sports team of our time.
Well, it's been so successful.
It has, in fairness.
It's been so successful that, like, if you're not...
they came from.
If you're not... So I was listening to Jack Conan speaking to Nathan during the week, and, you know, they didn't get it too much into it, but Jack Conan's like, oh, that obviously worked, didn't it? It did work. The referees were terrorised by what happened. And the next week, the match took, like, 160 minutes. It was like all of your blood leaving you slowly. You know, we were zombied by it. But, so... That's how you engage in referee baiting in the midst of a tournament. That's what you're supposed to do.
He is the general you want taking you into battle against anybody at the moment. Like, he will outsmart. There's a good chance he will outsmart you tactically, but certainly when it comes to the off the pitch stuff, there's every chance he's gonna beat you in that department. And it's on a number of levels. It's not just with the refereeing side of things. It's also, if you watch Chasing the Sun, the incredible motivational speaker that he is, the way he manages to tap into the background of every single player.
Yeah,
he's good at what he does. Razzie Erasmus, it turns out,
he's very good. The one thing is that the players are getting less credit than they deserve in the midst of all this, in that they are, as you know, when Quinny lists them off there, they're absolutely sensational. They are sensationally gifted, and the whole kind of, oh, they can only play one way. Well, that's because that's what they needed to do in that arm wrestle against the Lions, and they chose, that's how we will play, because you've decided that you're going to play against us that way. So maybe there's some room to Jimmy Hope in a hole, but it's been so successful, I doubt it. 23 minutes past nine. Here's what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio today.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Here's the idea for the next 10 pods. We can do Paddy's little holiday review. Yeah. 4 minutes of review.
Like Catherine Thomas here, no frontiers.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.